Hadi bakalım.
Congratulations, friends. We're back at war, but good news. You can buy a small truck from Ford now for maybe less than $50,000.
Actually, tiny cars, little tiny, itty-bitty cars.
So cute. They have them in Japan. I just saw them. Very cute. In fact, the cutest cars in the world. Meanwhile, we're bombing.
All the
making
bombing.
Making bombing great again.
Lots of drugs. Getting all the drugs out.
Yes, we are. Welcome back to another episode of Human Reaction, everybody. I guess that's how we're starting the show today.
That's how we're doing.
Be sure to like and subscribe to us. And let us know. Do you want a tiny car? Or a tiny truck?
Or some cocaine?
Well, you can't have cocaine anymore because we're killing all the narco-terrorists with bombings in the middle of the ocean in the Caribbean. So no more drugs, but you can have a small truck.
You know, interesting observation I just made right now. When you said the word narco-terrorist, for a long time, the only people who could coin new words was the left. Right, but the right just did.
Narco-terrorism's been a word for decades.
But it isn't mainstream. Like, no one was saying narco-terrorists every day. Right, it was like homophobia wasn't a thing until someone said, "Ooh, you're homophobic." You know what I mean?
Saying narco-terrorist?
Not really.
Yeah, when it comes to like the cartels, like I feel like that's been around for a decade. I feel like people.
I feel like it's that everyone got the letter to use this phrase.
Memo.
Now.
Yeah,
the propaganda memo was disseminated, and now narco-terrorism is popular.
I feel like people started saying it after Narcos.
All right, well, I'm going to Google Trends this, and we're going to see who's right once and for all.
Let's find out.
I feel like Narcos kind of got people to start saying it.
Okay, Kyle, we're arguing about semantics here, and we probably shouldn't. We should probably get on with the show. What do you guys?
I want to find out about narco-terrorism.
I think the audience wants to know this.
As the word contracted or not contracted? Neither one seemed to actually register almost at all.
Bennett, how did we get here?
I think it's your fault.
Hey, I didn't start this.
You kind of did.
I just antagonized it.
David said it's a new thing, and you were like, no, this has been around forever. So you started.
I've been using the term for a while, feel like.
Well, you're not the world.
All right.
Yeah, maybe that's true. That is true. I'm different.
Yeah.
I'm not like the others.
You're a knower.
Yeah, so we got an interest over time here. Basically, not used. That's with it.
There are a few blips there, but not like what we have now.
Yeah, this is that article Kyle read in 2019.
I'm one of two people. I'm one of two people there. It's like, oh, Smartmatic voting machines, narco-terrorists. Interesting.
Yeah, David, if you hyphenate it and if you add in narco-terrorism.
A little bit more.
There's a few of me.
It's still almost not used
at all. I'm one of 34. 2017 is one I'm thinking of. That would make
that
sense.
That could be right. This is a little bit. Yeah, you got a little bit back here.
Yeah, 2007. We got it.
I think this is a sort of you both win and you both lose situation.
Yeah.
Because I don't think
I think
we can substantiate.
Everyone that's still listening has lost.
I think everyone has left us and it's just us.
Now that you've been with us on our Google Trends episode.
Bennett, just cut most of this out. All right, for those
montage.
Of you, montage. Cue the montage music.
This episode is brought to you by Revved Up Promo, the official apparel partner of Human Reaction. Revved Up is a premier full-service shop specializing in laser engraving, screen printing, and embroidery. Not only are they now making all of our apparel right down the road from us, they can do the same for your brand and ship it to you anywhere in the world. Revved Up helps you navigate the extensive universe of merch options and uses state-of-the-art techniques to showcase your brand in its very best light. So if you want to support our show and our generous sponsor, you can now do so by buying our merch and by turning to Revved Up Promo for your own custom apparel needs. Reach them at revveduppromo.com. That's with two V's and two P's, or just check the show notes for a link.
All right, so where did these things happen? Everyone knows about the story. We've been covering it. The Trump administration has been bombing these ships and then like releasing the video. At least it isn't to like hype music so far, you know.
Oh, it will be. There will be a highlight reel. Mark my words. Yeah.
This is an administration of highlight reels.
Yes.
It's true.
So here's a map from Encyclopedia Britannica of showing kind of where we're talking about here. Of course, on the left there, you have Central America. You have the north part of South America with Venezuela at the top. And then, as you see, there's a series of strikes across the Caribbean, not far from Venezuela. One getting pretty close to the Dominican Republic there.
That was a joint effort with the Dominican government, though. Just want to say.
Cue the reggae music.
That was a weird pause.
Yama.
I just want to be clear that one was sanctioned by the Dominicans. Probably under the influence.
But they were like, this is bomb, man. And then they misheard and they were like, oh, they want us to bomb the man. Okay, yeah, send it.
Well, it was a cocaine shipment. It wasn't weed.
Yeah.
They don't like that shit over there.
No.
All right. So, and then we do have three strikes on the left, which was surprising to me. I did miss this, that October 21st, 22nd, 29th, reported strikes taking place in Eastern Pacific Ocean and west of Central America. No additional information regarding the location of these strikes has been released. So somewhere out on the other side of Central America, that also happened.
Yeah, those ones were over in international waters.
Question, are the Venezuelans taking the Panama Canal to get over there? How did they get over there?
I was thinking the same thing. I was like, what are they... Are they different countries? Like, are these
I have to imagine those ones aren't Venezuelan.
I would agree. Colombia?
So who are they?
Drug trade still works. Like, that could still be possible, but I'm just not sure if it would be Venezuelan associated.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, unless they got it through the canal. I don't know.
Honduras does have a little bit.
What do they tell the guy at the weigh station? Like, so where are you headed? Oh, yeah, fishing.
In my speedboat.
But that being said,
this summer's hottest craze, speed fishing.
On speed. Well, one of them was a fishing submarine. Allegedly.
Yeah. We need to circle back on this whole fishing submarine thing, because I don't understand the logistics, the mechanics of how that works.
The words I read were half submersible vehicle. That was what I read. It was one of them was a half submersible vehicle.
Sounds like a boat with a hole in it.
And then I saw a bunch of the critics being like, it was an honest fishing submarine. And I was like, I don't know how often do we fish in submarines? Is that a common thing? I'm no fisherman.
I mean, I don't know. How do you fish submersibly? I don't understand what you do.
Back in October, that was one of the things that was being said. So I just remember.
Yeah, here
that.
We go. I got it.
Just like one of those submarines with the mechanical arms.
It's just got a spear gun on the front.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Destroy a drug carrying submarine that was navigating towards the United States on a well-known narco trafficking transit route. U.S. intelligence confirmed the vessel was loaded up with mostly fentanyl and other illegal narcotics.
So they were fishing for addicts is what they were fishing for.
Got them on the hook.
Yo, they got them hooked for sure.
I don't understand. But was it Venezuelan?
I don't know. Well, I mean, these are cartels it's probably like Trendaragua or De Los Soles or something like that, which come out of Venezuela.
Oh, that's hardcore.
It surfaces and it goes under, and then
kaboom!
Here it comes.
Wait for it.
Oh, the anticipation. Shit.
For those only listening, we are watching a submarine blow up.
Damn.
It's a half submersible. Ooh,
that's more than a double tap.
That was half submerged. That's it's true.
Got the other angle. On top.
Yeah, not fishing from that. I don't think that's that.
I don't think that's a fishing vessel.
I don't think they have a plausible deniability of that being a fishing vessel. It's just a submarine, bro.
That's what the media was saying back in October with that vessel. I remember that being a thing. I was just like,
this is a perfect example of where you just need to think a little critically about things the media tells you. You're like, fishing submarine.
Interesting.
That's not real.
Yeah, interesting related, because the blow up this week was mostly about the double tap, and that there was they blew one up, and then some survivors were clinging to the outside of the vessel. And then they shot it again and blew it up. In this case, the two surviving terrorists are being returned to their countries of origin, Ecuador and Colombia, for detention and prosecution. Yeah, so like, it's interesting that they don't actually try to tie this one to Venezuela. This might be a completely different thing.
It's probably just cartels.
Yeah, but
which could be from, like, maybe it's Trinidad or something like that.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is kind of the primary cartel in Venezuela right now.
And the Suns one. Yeah, but we do have this justification and kind of a media blitz this week around what is the reason why people are supporting this policy of blowing up these ships across the Caribbean.
Following up on Gabe's question, you said that the follow-up strike was lawful. Mm-hmm.
What law is it that allows no survivors?
The strike conducted on September 2nd was conducted in self-defense to protect Americans in vital United States interests. The strike was conducted in international waters and in accordance with the law of armed conflict. And
then on this pardon for the Honduran.
Yeah. So
what is the law of armed conflict say about just bombing someone that you can't identify exactly who's in that submarine, right?
Well, they say that, well, in this case, it wasn't the submarine, but on the boat. What they're claiming is that they have identified them and that they are moving drugs, right? They're saying, we know they are doing that. Are they releasing how they know that? No, right?
Sure.
If the NSA program that they used to do that, they couldn't do that because that would be revealing a method.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, they're not really giving that information to the public, and we're kind of stuck having to trust the administration on that. Now, the idea, what she's quoting, which is the laws of armed conflict, that has to do more with international law, right? That has to do with the UN Charter on self-defense from other countries.
I see.
And this is a reoccurring theme in the justifications here, and what we have to have is a discussion as a country that should be happening in the U.S. House and Senate, but because they never do anything, we're now left doing it, saying,
They make insider trades. They give themselves raises. They do things. they shut the government down occasionally, too,
yeah,
just to make us sweat. You know, they keep us on our toes. Anyway.
Yeah, fair enough. So that debate should be happening there, but now we have to have the debate is, does this qualify under our understanding of legality for an invasion or an attack to smuggle drugs into a country? Right? Is that enough? Is that sufficient to cover under international law, as she's talking about here, or under the War Powers Act and the consequential powers of the president's war-making abilities? Because obviously the Constitution also says that only Congress can declare war. So therefore, what are we talking about when we're talking about
that? We threw that out the window.
Yeah.
That's cute, David.
Talking about the Constitution, that's really nice.
Yeah, I guess I'm old school like that. I kind of care about the country enough to
have an actual question,
though. Yeah, go ahead.
When she uses self-defense, is preemptive self-defense, is that a legal thing?
Yep, they're defensive weapons, Bennett.
That's exactly the thought I had. I think
the justification
weapons.
Is going to be along the lines of having information that is Venezuelans and probably some other countries working to actively promote the drug trade in the United States. And that's what is in which we're going to cover down the road is in a letter from the chief of intelligence that fled the country several years ago. Okay. I think it's going to be something like there was an active effort to use this as an assault on America, and that's going to justify the defense action. I think that's probably where this is going to be going in the future.
Yeah, the question is going to rotate around whether or not those kind of operations, which is not something that America does, right? In fact, the CIA, is now pretty well understood, that the CIA throughout the 1970s and 80s was moving cocaine in the United States mm-hmm. in order to sell to Americans so that they could have black market money so that they could do their work overseas.
Black budget stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to wonder, is this just the CIA removing competition?
The CIA hates competition.
it's just an aspect of foreign, are all intelligence agencies kind of operate in the drug trade? That's kind of how all of them work.
Exactly.
They make a ton of money off of this. They work with organized crime. Organized crime outlets, cartels tend to be their assets. And probably all these different cartels involved are probably assets of varying different foreign intelligence groups. And it's probably the problem with Tren de Aragua is it's probably just not a CIA one. Yeah. It's probably another one. Right.
Yeah. Right. And specifically in the case that we're kind of discussing is the idea that this is an operation give cause du jour, meaning a cause justly to go to war. That's the question. That's the debate that should be happening in Congress, but is now happening on CNN instead. Yeah.
Does this count as the war on drugs still?
This is definitely a continuation of the war on drugs.
It's in fulfillment of
that's how they're justifying.
I think it's probably in fulfillment of the executive order. There's an executive order on this.
I thought the drugs won the drug war.
They definitely did.
They did.
Okay.
Yes, they definitely did.
Fentanyl everywhere.
But the government don't go down without a fight.
Well, importantly, fentanyl is a creation of the drug war.
Explain that.
Well, it's an economics principle called the Iron Law of Prohibition. During Prohibition, you had more and more intense distilling of alcohol because it's easier to move smaller amounts of alcohol and smuggle it when it's very intense, right?
Right. So moonshine's easier to move around discreetly than kegs of beer.
Yes. In American consumption habits throughout the Prohibition era pivoted towards harder and harder alcohol, and we invented all kinds of crazy drinks in order to deal with that because it was difficult to move around large quantities of drinks. This is the same thing as applied to fentanyl, is the same thing as to opioids, as is moonshine was to beer.
So you're saying the more difficult that, let's say, heroin got to acquire, the more likely it was for a smuggler or somebody to be incentivized to bring in fentanyl because it's orders of magnitude more powerful, and thus they can transport more effective doses in less volume. Mm-hmm.
And therefore less likely of interdiction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although okay. I also think we just keep creating more new drugs.
Yeah, but it's like the demand side of it, right? So if in controlled markets, in white markets, there's much more safety like mechanisms in place to keep the downsides of drugs from having the collateral consequences that black market drugs do, right? So once you remove that, you've now created a much more open market for it to operate in.
Yeah, I think we'd still have illicit drugs that would occur though, like fentanyl. Like, I think that would still
happen. I'm not talking about the supply side, Kyle. I'm talking about the demand side. It creates the demand for those drugs.
Yeah.
Because it's more difficult to move around, so therefore it has a competitive advantage on the marketplace.
Yeah.
I don't know. I half agree, but I kind of half disagree with it. I have a hard time not seeing that there still just wouldn't be a demand that happens even if there was more white markets when it comes to drugs in general.
And partly true, that's true because of fentanyl's use in medical procedures, right? Fentanyl was invented as a medical drug for people who are resistant to opioids so that you could still do surgery on them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So that, and then some people just are. To opioids, like they just don't impact them the same. So they were working on a drug to do that. But then it has a comparative advantage in the black market that makes it much easier to move around because of that. Well, at least it makes it easier to smuggle. That's probably more accurate. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, go ahead.
Oh, I'm just going to say it's never made sense to me because since we mentioned that Venezuela, you know, proportionate to the global supply of fentanyl is a very minor player in that trade, why Venezuela is the target of specifically Trump's war seemingly on specifically fentanyl.
Yeah, Venezuela is not a fentanyl distributor. Like Mexico, it's China and Mexico are kind of the fentanyl distributors.
And I've just not been able to make sense of the fact that Venezuela is the target here when they don't really produce or distribute much fentanyl.
Have there been actual claims on these drug boats carrying fentanyl? I think mostly it's been cocaine.
Well, I mean, that tweet we just...
How they get there, Kyle, is they claim all the deaths of fentanyl in America for their justification for blowing up cocaine boats.
Yeah, but and there's cocaine laced with fentanyl and all this stuff, right? Like that's a big piece of it. But yeah, that's definitely true. Is Venezuela is not the fentanyl country.
It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And I know that Trump speaks in very broad strokes a lot of the time, but the tweet attached to the video we just watched of that strike on the submarine. Mm-hmm. Said, you know, this submarine was carrying predominantly fentanyl and it would have killed, you know, tens of thousands of Americans or whatever.
Yeah, it's a 25,000.
Right.
Who wrote that tweet?
I believe that was a Trump tweet. It was a
quote from Trump. Interesting. Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
And I don't mean to derail the thing here, but it's not made sense to me that Venezuela is this target. Like, are there other reasons for this?
Well, that's what we'll be diving into.
Yeah, it could depend on where the boat was going. Because, like, the boat could have picked up fentanyl, not necessarily from Venezuela itself.
It's like doing the milk run around the Caribbean.
It's about the cartels, at least in the justification here, it's about the cartels more than it is Venezuela, in a sense, right?
Sure.
And the cartels are all over the Gulf.
It's about Venezuela to the degree that they're using political capital to threaten Maduro to leave office.
Who allegedly has connections to
these
Suns.
Cartels. Yeah.
Specifically the Suns, but also cooperates with Tren de Aragua.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So that's it's distinguishing between who the enemy is here is important. I think that's and then distinguishing between the different accusations. So what we have here is this from Katie Miller, Stephen Miller's wife on CNN. I would blow this up to full screen, but for some reason it's not letting me. Otherwise, I have to let my guard down on my Brave account. And then
don't do that.
Yeah.
Now you know the struggles. These are the struggles. I don't have my computer here, but this is the struggles I always have to deal with. When things start freaking out, it's like, these damn websites.
I want to go back to something that Bakari said. He said that those orders that were given the drug boats in Venezuela were illegal. Can you cite those statutes, please?
Yes, because it's actually called the Due Process Clause of the United States of America. Because can you point to one of those boats that actually had drugs on them? Do you know that? Do you know about the Trinidadians who were killed innocently, who were just fishermen? Can you actually kill those fishermen without due process? So the answer to the question is yes. I can cite the Constitution, just as God did.
If you go and say that those were members of Al-Qaeda or ISIS coming to our shores with enough drugs or enough ammunition to kill 100,000 Americans, wouldn't you expect our commander-in-chief to take action to stop that? That's what's happening here.
That
is what's happened, by the way. That's what happens in every war zone, whether you go to Iraq, Afghanistan, Iran, Somalia. Let's talk about it.
Give me one name of one individual that you can compare to Al-Qaeda coming through that had enough fentanyl to kill all these Americans. Can you name one?
Let's go to what these drug boats are talking about, which is that we are actively ensuring that the war on drugs that we've been doing for...
We'll hold it there. We'll play it some more in a minute. So her case is, imagine for a moment if Al-Qaeda was in Venezuela and was coming towards America to give us drugs rather than doing 9/11. That's not a thing that's happening, right? That's a completely different thing. Because there's a very clear authorization to use of military force against Al-Qaeda. We passed it in 2001 and responded to the 9/11 attacks. When it comes to ISIS, ISIS was operating in Syria and Iraq. We had a 2002 AOMF, 2003, MySpace in that? One of those 2 years, on Iraq that gave us then ability to use that to invade Iraq and then to fight, you know, anyone we wanted there basically forever. That's what those AOMFs are written, unlike every other AOMF ever in the history of America. Those two said, you can do this forever until it's repealed. And then we have to actually confirm those AOMFs every now and then. That's kind of the mechanism they use for time limits.
And so here, in this case, we have no AUMF to justify these attacks on the drug boats.
Yes, that is the critical issue is when you're asking, is this legal? Now, when he says the due process clause, what he's talking about is the Fifth Amendment, and it doesn't say citizens, it says persons. And how the logic of this has typically worked is when you're talking about that, the courts have said that is true, but that is subsumed by war powers, of course, right? It was subsumed by war powers during the Civil War, subsumed by war powers when we were fighting Mexico. These situations, the war powers doesn't apply because in it specifically it mentions that you have during war and emergencies these don't apply. That's how they suspend habeas corpus during the Civil War. That's how George Bush suspended habeas corpus, your right to a speedy trial, things like that.
And I'm looking to
my conclusion. He's not making a very solid case either because he's relying on the wrong thing, right? If you're invoking the war powers, that's not an issue. The thing is, the war powers aren't being invoked, though, because there's no AOMF.
Right.
Now, they're invoking the war powers just saying, well, we're being invaded. These guys are armed combatants coming to America. And their weapon is drugs.
I mean, but wouldn't an alternative be to track the submarine until it reaches our shores and then arrest them and seize the drugs?
Well, that's actually what I was going to get
here,
too.
Submarine. There's only one submarine.
I'm sorry. Whatever. I've got fishing submarines stuck in my brain. You're making boat, submarine. Well, vessel.
Yes.
Vessel.
Yes.
So we
but answer my question, though.
And that's kind of what I'm trying to get to. Yeah. We do have a legal framework when it comes to the seizure and the arrest. Most of it is like non-lethal stopping of these types of ships and how it's illegal to have unidentified ships in the area, those types of things. But to my knowledge, none of that's been done for direct, like lethal kinetic force. Right.
And typically directed towards the Coast Guard.
Yeah.
Not to, these are statutes passing saying the Coast Guard can prevent drugs being coming to America. This is not statutes targeting the Navy.
Yeah, we have a lot of kind of the Maritime Drug Law Enforcement Act of 1986, Drug Trafficking Vessel Interdiction Act of 2008. Mm-hmm. All of these kind of have different legal processes of when it comes to the identification of unidentified vehicles in the water and what to do about that. Boarding and seizure.
So do any of these acts, you know, allow for just indiscriminate bombing of suspected
vessels? A lot of them appear to be non-lethal disablement is the way that they describe it as. And as I'm just kind of scrolling through cursory on these.
So dropping bombs is arguably, I think we can all agree, pretty lethal. The goal has been to kill people.
Yeah.
They've been successful at that.
It wasn't written
Joe,
with
defensive weapons. Defensive
it's just an airborne version of the wall. We're just building a wall around the submarine, pushing it to the bottom. I said submarine, I meant vessel.
Every time. You just like it's so submarine funny. Is like
I don't know why. Just fishing submarine is so conceptually funny to me. I
it
don't
is
know why.
Locked into my psyche for all time. Every single thing I ever see in the water again will be a submarine from now on.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure because I think there's like 20 different vessels, and I believe only one of them was a submarine. I think it was 22.
Look, it's the most exciting one. Okay,
all it takes is one, Kyle.
All right. So there was also a Wall Street Journal reporting, kind of in the same vein, because there's this whole effort to try to connect this to the war on terror, is what it seems like to me rhetorically. So that you can engage the same circuitry of the brain and therefore people will support. So we have this Wall Street Journal article here. If you want to read that for me, Joe.
Sure.
That'd be great.
The whole thing?
Yeah, read it from the top.
All right. Trump has ordered strikes on boats allegedly carrying drugs to the U.S. from Venezuela, but experts say the South American country sends far more narcotics for distribution to Europe, mostly through West Africa and islands near its coastline. The U.S. has also hit drug boats leaving Colombia, the world's largest producer of cocaine. There in Africa, smugglers link up with Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups that escort the cargoes north and extort payments from the overland convoys, said current and former rebel leaders in northern Mali. Surging transatlantic drug flows mean that cocaine seizures in Europe now exceed those in North America, according to the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. Quote, the quantities have gone up so much, the problem that traffickers have now is moving them, says Jeremy McDermott, co-director of at Insight Crime, a think tank focused on organized crime in the Americas. Bertrand Monnet, a professor of criminal risk at French Business School at HEC, said Venezuela has become a top Latin American transit route to Europe, though cocaine is also shipped to Europe from Brazil, Guyana, and other countries in large quantities. Secretary of State Marco Rubio, little Marco, I added that part, cited Venezuela's role as a drugs transit hub as a justification for the U.S.'s strikes on alleged drug boats. He said that instead of Europeans criticizing the U.S. action, quote, maybe they should be thanking us. Okay.
So what's interesting here is that if this is true, yes, they do collaborate with Al-Qaeda, but not to give drugs to us, to give drugs to Europe. So once again, we're defending Europe with these strikes, more so than
JD
defending
Vance must
us.
Be furious.
I am.
By their own logic.
We all know my hatred of Europe.
We don't have to go through that quote. That's not what I want. So, yeah. So, I am very suspect of Katie Miller's argument here, because this is literally saying, well, if the Khomeini had bombs, he would bomb America. But he doesn't have those bombs, right?
Right.
He doesn't have that capability. So what you're talking about is a fantasy land. Very similar set of arguments that we've seen during the Iran war buildup is happening again. Same sort of rhetorical like flourishes, rather than actually talking about what's happening and what the actual code or actually the actual law says.
Well, it is important to remember, too, back during Trump 1.0, we had the Venezuela stuff that went down. And there was, what was his name? We kind of just tried to do this like, Maduro's not president anymore, it's this guy. And then, but Maduro still had control over the military and was like, okay. And then Maduro stayed.
I don't know why, but the name Juan Guaido is on my head. Is that right?
That does not sound correct to me. This would have been like 2018 or so, something like that.
Yes, it's one of the many efforts for a coup d'etat in there. And they're saying that basically that the president he was actually a legislator in Venezuela, ran for presidency, and then there was an election, and then there was a lot of dispute about whether or not he won. He claims he did win. He kind of tried to do a government in exile thing. The U.S. supported him, and then it never went.
And then Maduro was just like, well, I still have the military. and then everything just kind of dissipated from there.
Yeah.
Well, and Tren de Aragua does operate as like a regime defense force internally within Venezuela.
I was right. Juan Guaido.
Really? That was his name? That sounds, for some reason, that sounds
that.
Like half Hispanic, but also not. I don't know why.
Which part of that's not Hispanic? Juan Guaido?
I don't know. The Guaido had an Asian feel to me for some reason. I don't know why. I was like, that feels, I don't know.
I was thinking more Italian, but I think I was thinking Guido.
That's where I was
maybe
going.
Maybe that's where I was going.
So speaking of Asian, not only should you be afraid of Al-Qaeda selling you heroin.
Also Asians.
But also China.
China.
Do you believe, Chairman, that it's time for a regime change? From China, they love me. What should the U.S. role be in potentially that happening?
I would look at that. I'd juxtapose it to Iran as well. People have been talking about that with Iran, right? So the United States preference might be that we would love to see somebody different there other than Maduro, just like we'd love to see somebody different there other than the Ayatollah in Iran. There is absolutely a bounty on Maduro because of the things that he and his regime have been doing to the United States of America. But we want to see these things done by policy from the grassroots coming up, from the people taking a change stance within their country, like the people of Syria did to oust Bashar al-Assad, so that we don't have these decades-long civil wars that go on in these places. That is the preference and policy for us, that it happened from the grassroots.
I believe that bounty on his head is $50 million if anybody wants a quick buck.
Yeah.
Speaking of head, I'm glad your head isn't shaped that way, David. He's an evil bald.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
How is it any different?
He definitely has a, like, sort of an egg head vibe.
Yeah, he's got like a points
taller.
He's got kind of an Andreessen egghead vibe.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
So famous egghead.
It's a compliment. Just accept
thank
it.
Thank you. Wow.
You have a nice head.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
You're an acceptable bald.
I appreciate
bald.
It. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
You're not like one of those other balds.
Someday the bald is going to be known as the slur, you know, like the blacks or the gays or whatever. You're going to get the credit you deserve. You know, people don't, that's your word.
We're not a minority group that gets that kind of recognition. That's for sure.
Someday I'm going to fight for you. Anyways, continue you. With your thought.
really should be a protected class, really, when I think about it.
China. What was the connection to China there? Like, it's really subtle. The Chinese connection is basically if you list all the countries that the United States hegemony does not like, China's one of them, Venezuela's one of them, Iran is one of them. That's why they're connecting these things. And then an assortment of transnational cartel-like groups, gang-like groups, terrorist groups. These are all different words for the same thing, which is non-state actors who don't like America, pretty much. This is the centerpiece, right? The centerpiece of this has to do with American hegemony, ability to say what's going on around the world at any given time, and control resources as needed, and control the outcomes of people's economic and political activities. And we can't do that in Venezuela, Iraq. We can't do that in Russia. And some people are like, that's the reason why we hate Russia. We can't do that in Iran.
Interesting. Yeah, that is a common thread.
So we should just bomb them all, clearly.
Well, we've been trying, seems like.
Yeah. Well, that's my hegemony like theory, is like just trying to step back and trying to look at the big picture.
Yeah.
There's ultimately a conflict between the world hegemony of America and America first. And that's why we're having this conflict over in Venezuela, although it's cutting differently than like Israel has been, because Israel triggers a lot more things, being in the Middle East, having to do with all these things and all the subsidies we give, all that kind of stuff. More clearly a contradiction in the sense that they're now kind of staking a different set of line in the sand for America first, with the saying, well, at least it's in our hemisphere. Like, at least it's over close to us, right? It's not way over there. But the hegemony doesn't care. The hegemony never stopped trying to get rid of Maduro or Chavez. This is one of many efforts to do that.
That's actually something I said like a year ago on the podcast was, I think when we were filling out our bingo sheets, I think I said this, where I said that I was a lot more open to disentangling from the Middle East and focusing, even militarily so, on the cartels in the Gulf area, because I thought that would be way more stabilizing for, I think, a good Central American region that's not a crime-infested hellhole with, like, MI6 devil cults. Not MI6, MS-13. I don't know. Same thing, right?
Really. I think we can blame the British for that safely.
Opium wars. They kind of ran the playbook. It's probably a relation there. But, like, the more focus on our hemisphere side and kind of having these strategic partners in El Salvador and Argentina to help clean up the Honduras's of the world and the Ecuador's of the world that are just like cartel infested hellholes, having good solid stability there would be very beneficial to America.
So
I think there's a question of how do you do it? Like, is a decades long occupation effort the way to do it? I don't think so. But if there is strategic partners that are able to help rid the crime and stabilize in kind of an El Salvador-like fashion, and you have partners like that, and maybe you aid with small military strikes here and there, I'm open to that.
Yeah, the question is, if you do a decapitation effort in Venezuela, will you result in the kind of stability you want?
That's the question.
Especially if what he's intimating, that Florida representative, and it's very interesting because all the representatives who are doing the media tour on rah-rah regime change are all from Florida, including Marco Rubio.
Cuba. Mm.
Right, so there's this localized demand for more effort to create a better South America and Central America in certain states where there's a large constituency of people who care about that. The trick is will that actually create the result that we want? There seems to be this idea that you can just decapitate a government and then people will be like, oh, well, we really like America, so we're going to now elect an American-friendly government. And I just want to know where that idea comes from and how insane it is. Because everything I see is every time we do this shit is there's a rally around the flag phenomena where they say, oh, we're being attacked by an outsider, an imperialist outsider that controls the world. In fact, we don't like that very much when you drop bombs on us. And so we're not going to elect the government you want. That seems like it happens every time, right?
Yeah, yeah, like with Saddam, you know, it's like, yeah, we topple Saddam and they're like, well, maybe he was a prick, but he was our prick. Like, fuck you.
Well, that's the thing is because like, in theory, it can happen if you have the right people and it's kind of the right moment in the country. And it's like, at that point, it becomes kind of similar to the French aiding America in the Revolutionary War. Like that would be kind of the analogy there that would exist where it could happen.
Well, but if it were invited. But I don't think it's been invited.
That's kind of what I'm saying. Okay. Like,
well, it's been invited, Joe.
Is it?
Yeah, they've been able to find all these people saying, it would be so great if you invaded my country and overthrew my government. The government's so bad.
And I'm sure none of them are paid by the CIA to say that.
It's hard to know. Right? Well, maybe they are.
Like, if you talk to a lot of Venezuelans, there's a lot of Venezuelan refugees that feel that way, right?
I wouldn't doubt that.
But that's the thing is there has to be a strategic, here's point A to point B, let's get there type of mode. And part of the problem that's always happened in the Middle East is it's kind of just this, we're going off on an adventure type of mentality, and it's not like a real solid strategic
thing that happens. What about shock and awe, right? What about like, you know, mission accomplished? Like it's always starts that way,
yes,
and then it never ends that
yes.
way.
Yes, I think you're misremembering what the origins of Iraq and the terror wars were.
I don't think I am. Like I'm saying the problem is that we just kept staying there and we kept doing more and more and
look
more.
Look at Somalia. We've been in Somalia since 2007. Mm-hmm. We haven't invaded, but we did sit in and we got in the middle of the Civil War. We're like, we're on your side. We're going to sit in the middle here. And now it's a basket case.
Well,
it has been for a long time.
That's the problem that I'm saying there is like, you're sitting there and you're just like, we're here. Like, that's the problem that I'm having with it. If there's an actual effort and it's like, this is the clear goal and we're moving in and we're going to get that goal done kind of quickly, and it's like we can get to point A to point B fast, I'm open to that. The problem is there's never really a clear goal, and that's been the problem with our military interventions.
No, wait, and that's only kind of true. Like there's always, when they go in, a clear goal. It's just that when the goal is accomplished, the self-licking ice cream cone goes like, yeah, well, now we need another goal. We got another problem to solve. But that's the problem in Venezuela. You might get in with a clear goal, which is to get in a new, you might throw your CIA coup, which is kind of what that Florida rep was kind of intimating on. It's like, we want a bottom-up revolution. They're going to stand up and overthrow the government. And we'll be welcome as liberators. You know, that's like embedded in there. That idea just keeps on not working out that way in real life. Because there's always, they just need a little push and then they'll overthrow the government. They'll install a good government. And then that doesn't happen. And then he used a Syria, which was supposedly going to be a limited set of strikes in order to dissuade from the use of chemical weapons, which turned into a 10-year-long civil war with seven sides and all this stuff. Every time the logic starts out of it, it's like, oh, real quick, adventure in the Middle East or so, or Africa or South America. I mean, like in all these like secret stuff that we did in South America throughout the 20th century, also all started that way, right? The CIA coup in Guatemala in 1954, you know, we spent, you know, a very little amount of money and it didn't take very long, but then Guatemala became a long-term basket case forever. Right. And it gave more opportunities for the communists and everyone else. And we did that because of the communists. All these things just always keep self-propagating because we keep on going overseas to find monsters to slay.
Well, and just to be clear, like that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm saying that I don't want there to be prolonged conflict that exists there. I'm saying if it seems like there is a moment in time that we can have right now where there is a quick operation that could, I'm open to the idea of it.
But it just never has been. So to expect such a thing, I think, is insanity. I just don't think there's precedent for that to occur. I think it's really wishful thinking.
I think that most of the problem is more so with the cartels, but then they're also, it's extremely embedded in the government. So like there needs to be a kind of a bottom up revolution that is happening in that area. And the problem is there actually a bottom up revolution that's happening? And I don't know. Is it just kind of CIA fluff or whatever?
Yeah. I mean, right? We just need a soft power color revolution to happen, right? We just need Arab Spring in Venezuela, and then that's all going to be great.
That'll never have collateral consequences. That no. won't create some more wars at all.
Never.
No, I get it, though, Kyle. I'm not saying what you're saying isn't compelling, because at the end of the day, you know, stability across South America is a laudable goal. Eliminating the fentanyl trade is a laudable goal. The question is like, are the things that we're doing, one, legal, and two, actually connected to actually creating that outcome in the long run because of the difficulty of the complexity of what you're doing? It's a very Hayekian point, but I've made it. I don't know if I've made it on the podcast, is that when you're doing a military intervention, you can't foresee the collateral consequences of that intervention, because what the system's complex and what you're doing is so big, it's hard to do something small like a domino set and V for Vendetta that knocks over all the things and creates that's a really great fiction, but very difficult to do in real life. And when you look at the history of these interventions, from either the history of the intelligence efforts to intervene, or the more overt military interventions in Korea and Vietnam and Iraq and Afghanistan and these places, have they ever worked? And do they not? They just don't, and I think because of that complexity problem.
Yeah. Well, and I think if we're okay to move on from this, because yeah. I think we've probably made the points.
I just have one more kind of quick thing on there.
Sure.
Is the reason why I think there's an argument that this could be in America first, especially when we're talking about within our hemisphere, is that the instability within the region has a massive strain on American markets. It has a very difficult on global trade, and there's a deep interest in that. And I don't think just letting the cartels be is going to ever solve that problem on its own. There has to be some form of intervention, whether it be through mercenaries or nation states or whatever, in order for that to get cleaned up in some fashion. And I think it should be much more on the onus of the local governments, and maybe America can have a support structure from externally, kind of like give some support there. I think that there's a reason for that,
like with funding strategic Al-Qaeda partners. Or...
I don't find that to be a useful.
I mean, I'm so jaded by U.S. intervention that I can't see a world in which us playing a support role actually does what is intended to do.
To be fair, and I don't want to belabor it, but I think what you just said, Kyle, is actually a really good summation of what our drug policy against the cartels have been historically. Mm-hmm. Historically, it's been a set of agreements between state actors in order to make a distinguishing movement against the cartels. The challenges and the constant challenges is our own intelligence apparatus is deeply embedded with the cartels.
Yeah.
And so is every other country in this area.
Right.
Oh, and not even just in this area,
and
across
the
world.
Overthrowing their governments is unlikely to change that dynamic, especially when we're the biggest hypocrites on the planet of making the case for why people should get rid of their intelligence apparatus's ability to operate the drug trades. Right. Iran-Contra happened. I mean, like,
yeah.
So it's hard, and Epstein was involved in it. But it's hard to actually get the kind of leadership that we want across South America when we're constantly the ones leading for hundreds of thousands of deaths over the 20th century on these things,
for sure.
and not apologizing for any of that. In fact, doubling down on it,
right.
In what might become the next one of those, Venezuela.
That is a perfect transition, because I think what we haven't discussed yet really is the hypocrisy of the Trump administration. The campaign promises that we were given was no new wars, no nation building. It wasn't just Trump. It was members of his cabinet-to-be, Tulsi Gabbard as well. And here we find ourselves living in a very different reality, which I don't think should be surprising to any of us, because we have all been around politics for long enough, and you guys more deeply embedded in it than I have. It's no surprise that campaign promises don't come true. Mm-hmm. Maybe we were a little bit naive or hopeful that this one would be different, but very clearly it's not.
Yeah. I get that, especially there's a giant black pill in that. And that's the difficulty of governing too, right? Governing is not the same as running. Like, it's easy to know that intellectually. It's definitely to know that what it's like when you're actually in power. If you take the pivot from we've made a bunch of campaign promises to now we're in Congress and we have to, and this is my experience with it, we now have to make decisions about a variety of things we did not campaign on at all. Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't, like, do you remember, like, he did talk about Venezuela, but it's like, a lot of oil down there. It could be great, but it's not great because socialism.
Yeah.
But the... that contention with reality is real, right? Like, it shapes everything. It puts you into a keyhole as the one who holds power, and it becomes more about how do I make sure I'm wielding my power to appease the people around me more so than what is the good,
right?
And I think the case here, like I said earlier about the Florida reps and Marco Rubio, is that Marco Rubio, as both really important in intelligence agencies, because he took over some roles there, and Secretary of State, and that he can now basically shape the worldview of the president and basically say, like, well, it's America first to overthrow a regime in South America. In fact, we'll just do it really quick, and it'll be really strategic and really surgical, and it'll be over in 6 months, you know, that sort of thing.
And your constituency cares because their neighbors and family members are dying from fentanyl overdoses.
Yes.
It'll be a win for your poll numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And did you know that fentanyl's in cocaine? And then that's all you got to say.
Right.
And Trump's a teetotaler, so you won't be able to tell the difference. One of the things that I really think is interesting in here too, especially what's so hypocritical to me, is cocaine is everywhere in D.C. It is everywhere, guys.
Oh, yeah.
It is you can't everyone. Swing a dead cat without hitting a guy with a bump in his pocket.
Like, any event you're going to, just all of your politicians are laced with cocaine and all of their staff.
So the fact that it was found in the White House is just really not that surprising.
Not surprising. Anyone who knows
like,
anything about
probably these Hunter, but like it could have been anyone.
So when you see one of these politicians say it's to stop the drugs from entering the country, that motherfucker was at a party this weekend and saw cocaine being used. I guarantee you.
The funny thing is Trump's actually sober.
Right.
Yeah, if anyone, he's the one that can say it.
Yeah, he's one of the few. But he's been seeing it since the 80s, I'm sure. And he wasn't reporting in the police either. It's like this. That's just the hypocrisy of the drug war, too. It's used brought much more broadly than people understand. All we look at is the deaths. We don't look at all the people who use it and then they don't die from it. I'm not saying you should use drugs. Don't use drugs, kids. I don't do cocaine.
Drugs
you
are bad, okay?
Yeah. But you have the same politicians who go to the parties and do that sort of thing. And all the people around them all getting together and be like, we're doing this to save. When it's really about oil. You know, it's really about the hegemony. It's really about other things.
Is it really about oil? We haven't talked about oil. There's some assertions that it is. What's your view?
Well,
Venezuela is one of the highest oil reserves in the world, just where they are located right now. So that could be one of those things. Also, they might make up for about 5% of the illicit gold trade. I know that gold is a big factor and is probably one of the variables in all of this too, mm-hmm. especially with all the illicit gold that seems to be moving around right now. Mm. 80% of that's in Africa. There's a lot of stuff going on in Africa right now.
Allegedly, I mean, I think more than allegedly funding a lot of terrorist organizations over there. I can't remember if it's ISIS that's located in Northern Africa, then they're like running all the gold mines there.
There's so much nonsense. Well, that's the thing is Tren de Aragua is operating a lot of the gold mines in Venezuela right now. And I think that's, I saw a number is that the amount of money that Tren de Aragua operating the gold mines is making Venezuela like $1.6 billion annually. I saw a number, something like that. I might be wrong on that, but that's interesting in itself. So, but also emeralds is a big thing in Venezuela. There was another major thing that I was like, ooh, Venezuela's got that. And I can't remember what
rare
it was.
Rare earth minerals, probably.
Lithium. Lithium, I think, was another big one. Mm-hmm.
So in order to understand the oil story in Venezuela, you have to understand the history of Venezuela-American relations. And tell it really quick. In basic is that there was a series of U.S.-led... what's the right word to say? Different intelligence operations within that area that was long stipulated to be an imperial effort to control Venezuela remotely. There was also the implementation, or at least the what they would call economic colonization of different oil companies, ExxonMobil, which was Standard Oil, right? And whenever you think of ExxonMobil, just replace that with Standard Oil, and you'll understand the history of ExxonMobil, that was the Rockefellers, mm-hmm. right? And the Rockefellers really tied into the U.S. government and the founding of the intelligence state and very involved with the origins of the U.S. empire.
And Mr. Beast, apparently.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, Mr. No Beast just signed on with the Rockefeller Foundation to do some like propaganda shit.
Wow.
For the kids. Stay it's for the target. Kids.
Interesting. All right. So Hugo Hugo Chavez attempted a coup in 1992 against a president who was friendly to the United States. He then runs in 1999 and wins. When he runs in 1999, he runs as an anti-imperialist, basically saying, no, we should control our own country and our destiny. He's also a socialist. He's a national socialist, right?
We all know what that means.
Yeah.
Kill him.
In 2002, right out, so 3 years later, there's an attempted coup. 2007, he, so eight years go by before he nationalizes the oil. In that time, we don't like him, but we're not doing crippling sanctions. It isn't until he nationalizes the oil that we then put in these crippling sanctions. It's even a little while, well, actually, it's actually a couple of years after that. There's a median time in there before we actually implement the sanctions when we're kind of in negotiations with him and no one really cares that much other than ExxonMobil and these other organizations that got kicked out of the country and got their assets expropriated. Now, interesting here is that they were getting actually a fairly decent deal as compared to what you could find in some other Middle Eastern countries like Iran. They got a much better revenue share than Iran ever did. But they still wanted that, and they basically ran an a socialist effort at the beginning that was somewhat like what you'd find in Alaska. They basically take revenues and then they split up a bunch of revenues and they give it out to checks to the people. Right? That's not different than Alaska.
No,
and no one calls Alaska a socialist hellhole.
Well, now, some people do.
But like when you look at what is the origin of Venezuela's poverty, is it socialism? Yes and no. It's a little bit of both, right? So they both like leaned into socialism as they were getting these crippling sanctions, and your ability to trade with the world does determine your wealth. So when you see people say, oh, Venezuela, they're poor because they're socialists, it's like, yes, they are poor because they're socialists because their domestic economy is actually completely like devastated by lots of socialist policies, such as buying, like basically nationalizing all the grocery stores in order to stop inflation because of their monetary policy. That said, the crippling sanctions is the thing that keeps Venezuela from being Alaska, right? And not just like a particularly poor Alaska because they've collectivized a bunch of stuff. So it's this weird combination. Now, from that time till today, there's been other kind of coups, including one only a couple months ago, attempted coups in Venezuela that the U.S. government's tried to pull off. And yet, you know, we haven't really seen a movement there. Are we going in now for oil? Would we depend upon like this idea that I think is probably a little bit overblown that the U.S. government's entire interest is oil. I think it has more to do with hegemony, but it likely has to do with gold.
Secondary, yeah.
And the drug trade.
I think the resources in general is kind of secondary. Like it's a piece of it, but it's not the entire piece.
Yeah, that's why you need, that's why they kind of wag the dog, right? And they say, oh, it's Hezbollah. They're giving money to Hezbollah. Hezbollah's in Venezuela. You know, like kind of these topics like that. You're like, what?
There is known trade with Hezbollah that goes with.
I know, but he goes further than that. He says Hezbollah is in South America. Like, are they there to trade or are they there to conduct operate? He doesn't say, right? Hezbollah is the army of Lebanon. Maybe they're trading with them, and we don't like that because we can't control them, mm-hmm. and we don't like Hezbollah because of Israel, but. You know, or maybe because they attacked us and other things like that. But I'm just making the case that there's this has to do more with like this idea of global hegemony than it does any like, oh, singular cause du jour that they are pointing to.
Strategic mm-hmm. enemies intertwined with all of this. There's a bunch of factors. Yeah. But it ultimately comes down to like our spheres of influence, other spheres of influence.
Yeah. I mean, is this a vector of attack to try to further weaken, you know, Russia or the BRICS trade bloc, thinking Venezuela is more involved with them than they are with sort of the U.S. orbit?
I have a theory of some of the gold stuff has to do with BRICS. I just have like a theory in the back of my head because I know the gold, the illegal gold trade is about $50 billion market and about 10% of that comes from Venezuela is my understanding of what I've looked into. I kind of have that theory is that there is a Russia-Chinese partnership that exists there with Venezuela and I mm-hmm. kind of wonder if that's an element that is, but I don't think it's the sole element,
right?
You know, but like,
it's just geopolitical.
I do think that might be where a lot of that gold is going, but it's also for their own handling their own inflationary policies. I think that there's a lot of that that's happening too, because speaking of what you were talking about with their crazy hyperinflation that they went through, do you remember that famous article about a decade ago that was like, World of Warcraft currency is now worth more than Venezuelan currency.
No way.
This was like 10 years ago or so. I remember that article.
Probably only famous in nerd circles if it has to do with WoW.
It was a pretty like big thing that was used to be like, Venezuela's crazy right now. Back in 2015, 2016.
Maybe. Wow.
Right. Yeah. So like the inflation rate in Venezuela in 2023 was 189%.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Yeah. And it's been higher. In 2021, it was 687%.
Holy moly.
So
is that bad?
Yeah, that'd be bad.
It's pretty bad.
All right. So another interesting story that happened this week is we have the president pardoned a former president of Honduras.
Well said.
Juan Orlando Hernandez.
Nailed it.
Well said.
Thank you.
I'm proud of you.
I've been working on it. Juan Orlando. Okay.
He's speaking in the mirror. He got this one.
Crushing his Spanglish right
now. Yeah, there you go. So he was convicted of moving over, 400 tons of cocaine into the U.S., 400 tons. Because he was the president. He was part of the party that was aligned more with the right in Honduras. He then gets done with his presidency. He escapes the country, runs around, and is eventually picked up, and he moved to America, and then prosecuted for being a narco terrorist.
By which administration?
Well, originally the Trump administration picks him up and then gets the extradition, and then it was the Biden administration that does the prosecution.
So I haven't dug into this one at all, but I'm kind of assuming that I don't know if this is part of the reasons, like, was there public reasons for the pardon? Because what I'm assuming is it's kind of a quid pro quo. We'll pardon you. We get a bunch of information, especially because Honduras is kind of known as one of the biggest narco states in the region.
Mm-hmm.
I'm suspecting that's probably, was that publicly stated at all? I have to assume that's the reason.
Yeah, we had two videos, but we're going to go with this one because the other one was too annoying on a plane and everything where it is. And they asked the question of Trump's quote here, which is interesting. So it leads off with the Trump quote and then it gets into the question and she'll give you the answer.
A separate question. The president several days ago said it was his intention to pardon the former president of Honduras, who was a convicted drug trafficker. And yesterday on Air Force One, the president said that if someone sells drugs in that country, that doesn't mean you arrest the president and put him in jail for the rest of his life. How is that different than what the administration is accusing Venezuela's Nicolas Maduro of?
You're cherry picking the president's statement a little bit yesterday, as he also said yesterday the people of Honduras have highlighted to him how the former president Hernandez was set up. This was a clear Biden over prosecution. He was the president of this country. He was in the opposition party. He was opposed to the values of the previous administration, and they charged him because he was president of Honduras. There were some other egregious facts that came out during this trial, and I would encourage you to report on them. His court-appointed lawyer was only given 3 weeks to prepare for trial. He shared that his conviction was lawfare by the leftist party, who, quote, struck a deal with the Biden-Harris administration. Hernandez has highlighted there was virtually no independent evidence presented, and many of his conviction was based on testimony from many admitted criminals who hoped that cooperating would reduce their own penalties. So the president heard the concerns from many people, as he does, and he's, of course, within his constitutional authority to sign clemency for whomever he deems worthy of that.
Interesting.
Okay. So her justification for cherry picking was that he was allegedly set up, but you just told me that it was the Trump administration.
No, I was wrong about that. So in 2021, his visa was revoked for corruption, and then he was arrested in Honduras on 2022 and then extradited to New York in 2022. So it was all under Biden.
Okay.
I was thinking of a different guy that we can get into if you want, who is also commuted, then he has like a giant Ponzi scheme.
So but different Juan.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Different guy.
A different one. He was a different one.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So this very well could have actually been a setup or some sort of political lawfare scheme
It makes sense. It makes sense. But like their narrative isn't nonsensical. It only seems nonsensical if you have a very normie view of how international parties are, right? Yeah. But
let us behind the curtain on that then.
So like, remember when we were talking about Mike Benz and USAID? Yeah. And he said that there's really two sides of USAID. You have NED and IRRI, mm-hmm. and they both have like clientele and international projects they're doing overseas to like influence governments.
But they're sort of individually partisan in their own way.
Yeah. One's right? like yeah. the Republican one and one's the Democrat one.
Right. Yeah. It's understand the dynamics like that. And all of a sudden you have this picture of who I'm going to go after might have something to do with who's working with IRRI, who's working with NED, who's on my side in this global partisan like
factional divide.
Yeah, that have to do with who gives the monies to the parties and who is cooperating and not cooperating, who has a CIA handler and does not have one. You know, all those things are all variables and kind of like calculating out who's the friend and who's the enemy.
Could have been a turf war in a sense.
Like, yeah.
Of he's like
he's the IRI guy and the NED
he's your
comes
asset
in.
And we don't like that, so we're gonna imprison him. But well, especially because he's a right wing. I don't know the Honduran. I wish I knew the Honduran political divide a little bit better, because apparently this guy's the right wing guy versus yes. left wing too. So
yeah, and Trump just endorsed a guy from the exact same party for the election that just happened in December 1st, 2025, with a very, very close election that hasn't actually been worked out, as I looked up the numbers on Tuesday. So I don't know if it worked out yet, but super low voter turnout, super tight election. Could be rife with voter fraud. Who knows?
What are their voting machines?
Yeah. Could be Smartmatic.
I believe Venezuela gave up Smartmatic at this point, I believe.
Well, Smartmatic actually condemned Venezuela's most recent election.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, it was a non-legit, which is interesting.
Ooh. Yeah, we'll get it. That'll be the next part of the story talking about that.
But it is interesting that, you know, the guy, he wasn't a narco-terrorist, and this was all set up by the Biden regime. We don't know. It'd take a much deeper set of research to find out how thorough this was. She does provide like some, I think, compelling evidence that could be, I mean, very, very short period of time to prepare for a case. That said, you are going up against the largest intelligence apparatus in the world. You'd think they would be able to prove a case, like beyond a reasonable
doubt. Honduras is also I believe it's the left-wing politician in Honduras.
A separate question.
One of these fishing what was a fishing vessel. It was like, that one was a fishing vessel. And that's what's caused a lot of hysteria over. I believe that came from Honduran intelligence at the time. But they're also a very close partner. Honduras, like historically, is a very close partner to Venezuela. So it's kind of hard to, who do you trust in all of this? And my understanding is that there's a big connection there between the Suns and whatever the Honduran cartel is. There's a big trade connection that exists there between that on the smuggling side. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
The current party is the Libre Party, and they're actually already out of the election. They only got 20% of the vote. It's really down between the Asfura Party and Nasrallah. So, yeah. Huh. We'll see how it shakes.
Yes,
but interesting part of the dynamic, and definitely gives you insight into the larger political sphere of international global politics that plays along lines that look very much left versus right, Democrat versus Republican. And if true, it does undermine the Trump's case a little bit, though, if the guy was a narco trafficker. But it actually makes sense, because we also know that the government is actually really in favor of narco trafficking, whatever benefits them. It's really about who controls the narco trafficking.
Well, it could be intelligence offering that's happening there. Of like, here's my understanding of things, too. There could be a lot of that that's going. That's what I meant by my quid pro quo statement.
Yeah, exactly.
Of, hey, I will be a partner with you in helping with this by providing everything I know, the contacts, yada, yada, as the president of one of the Central American countries, former president, which is kind of what this next part of the story is. So there's a letter from the former chief of intelligence of Venezuela. He was chief of intelligence under the past two administrations in Venezuela. So he's been there for like two decades. Mm-hmm. He is currently in prison, and what's the word I'm looking for? He self-committed to prison. He fled Venezuela. That's what it is. I'm like, what is the phrasing I'm looking for?
I know
fled
words.
To Spain.
I have the best words.
He fled to Spain several years ago ideological disillusionment with Maduro. I think it was like 2018, 2019, something around that. I don't have it directly in front of me. And then he got extradited to the United States, and he's been going through, and he pleaded guilty for and confessed to narco-terrorism this summer. And now he has written a letter that has now gone public. About 2 days ago, the letter went public, where he laid out, here's like four major points that I could work with you on, Mr. Trump, for understanding the Venezuelan story from my time as chief intelligence officer. This is like if Tulsi Gabbard was confessing to all the secrets.
Wow.
Like he's like that level of intelligence in Venezuela. So he had four main points there. The first one was he first just talked about general narco-terrorism. He was talking about working with the Cubans and the Russians, I believe, on trafficking drugs into the United States through the Cartel of the Suns, using it as a way of weaponizing drugs against the United States. He said that this goes all the way back to Chavez and utilizing Cuban operatives and Hezbollah, he talks about in there. He then talks about Tren de Aragua. He talks about how Tren de Aragua was originally kind of a regime defense force, but then we had an explicit policy of transporting them to the United States. The letter, he then goes on and talks about espionage within the government, about how they have embedded spies within the, and some are active politicians, currently to this day, he talks about in the letter.
Active politicians in the U.S.?
In the U.S. government.
He doesn't name them though.
Yeah.
Who are allegedly spies for
people within nonprofits, that type of stuff. And then he goes on, and this is where a lot of people have really been talking about this voting machine stuff, mm-hmm. where he talks about Smartmatic and how it was a tool designed for the Venezuelan regime to stay in power forever. And then how they exported the technology into several countries, but the United States being one of them. So he puts out this whole letter, and obviously this is him trying to get a reduced sentence or a pardon or something like that. There's that side of it.
And a spy chief would never lie to us, Kyle. There's no way he'd lie to
especially
us.
Especially
not for... He wouldn't just give us things that we already knew as evidence of things that he knows. Right.
But also, he did have a falling out with Maduro. Yeah. He supported Guapo? Is that his name? Guapo. Guapo is what? Isn't that, doesn't mean fat?
Guapo. I think it means handsome.
Holy guapo.
Juan Guapo. Handsome John.
Fun fact, there was a Red Sox relief pitcher when I was growing up, and his nickname was El Guapo.
He
was a fat guy.
Oh, fun fact, this guy's name was The Chicken.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? It's
a childhood nickname. I looked
Gordo?
It up.
Gordo's handsome? I don't
know. Yeah, he's he was given the nickname Chicken for his skinny legs.
Ah. Oh, Gordo's fat. Guapo's handsome. Mm.
But interesting. Curious to see what comes of that. It is an interesting letter. Like I said, he is somebody that fled the Maduro government to Spain and then got extradited over. So,
and the Smartmatic thing, we have known since like 2015 for like 10 years now. I mean, it's been a long time. Lou Dobbs did his whole special on it. We don't have to watch it. But
that clip from Lou Dobbs was back in 2006.
2006. Yeah. You're right.
I believe the Smartmatic stuff started in 1999, I believe is when that started.
Yeah, you guys can find it online and check it out. But yeah. it is an interesting segment and compelling from the point of view. I think some people are kind of using this. Compelling from a point of view of like the intelligence games that go on internationally, not surprising to me. If you were an intelligence operator, would you invest in a way to control elections by software? You know, of course you would. So we should be skeptical of that sort of thing. And, you know, don't have to believe it wholesale. But, man, it's compelling reporting and an interesting, you know, corollary with Venezuela. That said, afterwards, Smartmatic moved against Maduro and condemned him on elections. This was after they were kicked out of the country. So yeah. I don't know. But even this is from Data Republican. Even Smartmatic blew the whistle on Venezuela for using their machines to falsify totals.
Yeah, the 2017, yep. I remember that. That's when I remember looking into the Smartmatic thing way back in the day.
That's when you started looking up narco-terrorism?
Yeah, actually probably true. I had a 2017 Venezuela kick, I think, where I just started studying Venezuela, but then I haven't really looked at Venezuela since.
Yeah, so I wanted to end off with this, if that's okay, guys, is just talk a little bit about the actual danger here. Because I think in order to kind of inoculate yourself from the propaganda, you have to lean into facts. What do we know about the world? And when they say that this is to stop drugs, that is ways to manipulate the public. It doesn't have a lot to do with what's actually going on. Right. That's what I, if there's one takeaway, take away that. And part of my proof here is look at the figures on cocaine overdoses. This is deaths per 100,000 people in the United States. Deaths from cocaine in the mid-2000s. And once again, I want to make this point. Cocaine's bad. Don't do it. Was one or two people per 100,000.
But it's not that bad.
I mean, if everybody in D.C. is doing it. All right.
And from 2013 to 2015, suddenly it takes off from 2015 and to 2019. Or 2017 in this data set, right? What that is the introduction of fentanyl. If you notice the exact same time from 2013, there's a slight takeoff in 2015, lagging indicator maybe for cocaine. Into 2017, it's really taking off in this huge way. There are ways to tell whether or not someone had, of course, you know, fentanyl was a contributing factor. This data set doesn't distinguish that too much from that. And there are ways of finding out where cocaine comes from. So is cocaine going to Central America, being mixed with fentanyl and coming to America? I'm sure that's possible. But if the real policy was fentanyl, we'd be targeting a very different set of policies, probably, when it comes to our government side of this, of what governments were tracking. We'd be looking at Honduras. We'd be looking at Mexico, honestly. That's where almost all the fentanyl comes from. But we're not doing that, probably because the political avenues to do that are different. And this is a smoother political avenue that's in the benefit of IRI and the International Republican Institute, like actors that care about this, such as Standard Oil and such as people who might be competitive in the gold trade. And if we look to those variables, these things now make sense. And this slop, the public slop of this is to stop drug deaths, and then therefore the legal justification fall apart. Because it really isn't about that. Because if it was about that, we'd have a completely different policy.
I don't know about that entirely. I don't actually reach that conclusion from this data. Because when I'm saying it, Tren de Aragua's operations in America started in the early 2010s, like around the 2013 time period. So like you could make a correlation to that, right? Of when we're just looking at this chart.
Yeah.
This is where everything starts to spike up right here, right?
Okay.
So like there could definitely be a correlation to that. And I also don't think you're just kind of saying like they don't really care about the drugs. Like I don't know if you can necessarily make that claim. I think that's definitely a variable in all this.
Well, if they cared about fentanyl, would the government policy would be to bomb cartels in Mexico where the fentanyl is put into the drugs?
Well, it doesn't just have to be fentanyl here. Like we're talking about
the cause of the deaths that we're currently using to engage your emotional centers have little to do with cocaine, because you can see the track is around 2 per 100,000 and then quadruples and then sextuples into 12 per 100 in part. And this is where you look at the psycho stimulants with potential. That's measuring when it's mixed with other drugs. So what we're talking about here isn't just the change between these two. It's the takeoff here, because cocaine was relatively non-abused and then becomes massively abused and then massively deadly circa around 2013 to 2017. And now, don't get me wrong. Does Tren de Aragua play a role in the fentanyl trade? Totally open to that. Is this a battle against cartels?
But
yes.
I think cocaine trade is also a part of this, though. Like just illicit drug trade is also like it's not just fentanyl. Like the fentanyl stuff has a strong connection to, I mean, it's being largely crafted. Like, I think the number is like 90% of it is being crafted in Mexico. And then like the Chinese scientists and that type of stuff, that's all a whole thing. But just when we're talking about illicit drug trade as a whole around the Gulf, I think there's maybe almost too much of a hyperfixation on just fentanyl in this.
I don't think that it's David's hyperfixation. I think that he's saying this is the narrative being spun by the administration, specifically Trump. He has been overtly public about his focus on fentanyl. I don't think Trump has really focused on cocaine at all as it regards this. I mean, fentanyl was the big question around, you know, the border, right? It's like we have to close the border because we have to keep fentanyl from coming into the country. Fentanyl is in the popular zeitgeist. It hasn't really been a focus on cocaine, except
I'm just zooming
for,
out into the cartels as a whole, though.
Yeah. Right? So if you look at if you look at the deaths by cocaine, we're talking about is about 30,000 deaths in 2023. Right. If you look at that's a lot of deaths. Absolutely. What the administration just said, Kristi Noem just said, that it was 120,000. right? Like they're saying all these people are dying from cocaine.
Sure.
Well, it's not cocaine. It's fentanyl. Right. And she, those aren't the right cocaine numbers, nor are they even the right fentanyl numbers. But when you look at alcohol, kills 178,000 people per year in America, right? Usually from long-term abuse and like kidney failure and stuff like that. 48,000 annually are just like alcohol poisoning. Yeah, so if we start putting fentanyl in alcohol, it would explode. And that's my point here is like, that is the thing that's really the problem. Not endorsing cocaine. Once again, I'm only saying that it is the policy doesn't make sense from that point of view. It only makes sense to elicit the emotional response of we're defending America so that we have our cause du jour to overthrow a regime in Venezuela. Yep. If you're going to overthrow a regime for fentanyl, it would be Mexico.
Right.
Well, I guess kind of what I'm saying is it's more about the cartels and the emotional appeal sure is on the fentanyl and that's a big deal, but it's about these power structures that are the cartels within the region. Like I guess what you were saying was keying in my head. I felt like there was maybe a downplaying of the cartel activity in a sense.
No.
That's what it felt like with the argument that you were presenting.
Well, don't get me wrong. Like enhanced ways to stop the cartel from trafficking people and drugs and stuff. I have no problem with. Blowing up boats and then using that as an intimidation. I mean, Marco Rubio said this week, the fact that Maduro is nervous about the largest military in the world being parked off his coast, threatening his life, proves he's in the drug trade. That's the rhetoric coming out of the administration. You know, like that he did that on purpose. It's in order to inculcate that there is, and I don't know whether or not they're involved in the drug trade. I suspect they are. I suspect almost all governments are. The question is what is the propaganda and what is the truth? And the truth to me has everything to do with other resources that, and then, you know, some of these people are actually being very overt. We didn't go over it, but there was a representative from Florida that pretty much said, we got trillions of dollars of oil opportunity there. All that economic activity to come to America, you know, like that is real. And probably, I think, the more fundamental driver.
Well, and the strategic partner side of this for developing strategic trade partners around the region would be massively economically beneficial to America, right?
Yeah.
Like, nobody's really.
I just disagree with the use of the U.S. military that way. I think it should be about protecting Americans. And if we were going to protect Americans, I don't think we'd be blowing up random cocaine boats in Venezuela. We would be doing more strategic opportunities in Mexico against the fentanyl traffickers.
To be honest, I think all of the above, in my personal opinion.
Let me finish my thought. You're right. Additionally, I wouldn't be threatening a regime change war in Venezuela, which is what the president's been doing for the last 2 months, right? Where he's saying, you need to leave. And then doing a coup that was then caught by the Maduro regime and then, you know, being successful. If you do a control and you take the fentanyl out of the cocaine and you keep the same rate of 2 deaths per 100,000, you now have about 7,500 people dying annually from cocaine overdose. So barely, like actually less than alcohol-induced deaths, which is interesting.
Yep.
Right. That's how big it is a fentanyl problem.
Clearly, it seems like, if anything, it may be the drug trade to some degree, but there have to be ulterior motives. And I think that we can probably agree on. Let us know in the comments what you think the motives for this might be. Are you buying the official story or are you not? And I suppose with that, it's a good place to wrap up. Gentlemen, thank you for your time this evening. Bennett on the buttons, Kyle Mack, David Rand. I'm Joe Sheehan. Thank you for watching. Join us in the Discord to discuss. Link is in the description below. See you in the next one. Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com.